It's time for Cover 2 Broncos. Just a couple dudes breaking down scheme, film, and the numbers. Now, your hosts, Joe Rowles.
Welcome back to another episode of Cover 2 Broncos. I am Joe Rowles, and I am joined today by Damian Parson, who writes about the draft for the Crocker Report. If you do not already follow Damian, go to DP_NFL. I cannot recommend it enough. Awesome video breakdowns. He covers basically every position. I learn a lot from him. I recommend it. So, yeah, go follow him. I am stoked to talk ball with you, man.
Trey, I'm glad to be here, man. I'm glad to be here.
So right before you came on, we were actually talking about like what you're working on. I want to talk about that really quick just because I think that's okay. Really cool.
No problem.
You're looking at deep threats.
Yeah. Yeah, I got an article coming out. I'll be working on that tonight and probably tomorrow. So it should be available as long as our editor is available, either Sunday or Monday. It's called Designated Deep Threats. This draft, and I talked about it on Twitter about a month or two ago. This draft class, in terms of receiving prospects, there are a lot of speed guys. You know, granted, one of my favorite guys, Reggie Roberson, went back to SMU after he had the leg injury. I was hoping he would come out. But there's a ton of guys that are out there, Anthony Schwartz, and just a lot of different fast guys that made, because when I thought about it, we was talking with one of my colleagues, my guy Eugene. We talked about the fact that when you hit designated, you usually think about designated pass rushers, right? Mm-hmm. Remember Alden Smith came in years ago to the San Francisco 49ers. He wasn't playing all three downs. He wasn't playing on those running downs early on. No, they brought him in beside Justin Smith when he, became the Smith brothers. And he came in on third down, fresh legs, explosive athlete. He was a designated pass rusher early on. And we see that a lot. Guys that come off the bench on those passing situations, you want to get as much speed on the front seven, as much speed on your D-line as possible, and you go after the quarterback. So I thought about it, that is a term that we're so used to hearing. So I was like, man, they're specialists in terms of receivers as well. Guys that may not be the best route runners or natural separators to play down in and down out, but they can come in and we all see it every game, every year. Your team's driving, they get to the 50-yard line, first and 10. Let's go ahead and run a shot play. Play action, you got single high, you got one-on-one coverage, and you're going for the deep ball. You're going for the jugular. And now think about those receivers that aren't going to be every down guys. They're not going to be your fantasy guys, consistently. They're not going to be that receiver that makes a mark all throughout the game. But they're that receiver that can make those shot plays, that can turn a screen, a two-yard screen or a wide receiver tunnel screen into a 50-yard touchdown. Those designated deep threats with elite speed and athleticism to really threaten defenses. So I think that was a fun concept that I thought about. So I might as well put it into an article.
And one of the things I think is really great about it too is the way a lot of NFL teams are building receiving corps now is, and again, it's kind of like a cliche at this point to say you're building it like a basketball team, but like what they mm-hmm. generally will do is they'll try and get a guy at the top who can kind of do it all. They'll try and build around him. What he isn't necessarily able to do, they'll try and complement him. But as you go deeper down, you're looking for role players. And most teams, what they'll do is they want shot guys. And I know in the Broncos are no different. Like going back to when he was a head coach with the Giants, Pat Shurmur used Darius Slayton basically as a slot fade guy. And with the thing, like with Deontay Spencer probably going to become a free agent, the Broncos probably could use a speed guy who could feasibly play in the return game. Does anyone come to mind kind of like as a day three guy that might fit that role? Not to put you on the spot.
No, you're good. You're good. I mean, day three guy, that's what, round five
four or five through seven.
So I think about, four or five through seven. So I'm thinking Dwayne Eskridge, Western Michigan, kind of a short, stocky build guy, but he has ridiculous straight line speed. He can return punts and kicks. He's that guy that you kind of can kick in there on those shot plays or those manufactured touch plays and really, truly make an impact. There's a couple other guys, of course, but definitely he's probably one of my favorites because he's not going. I don't think he's going to. Granted, he had a great Senior Bowl. He was killing it in the practices and one-on-ones and drills. I'm not sure that would be enough to vault him into the, day two range just yet. Of course, granted, we all know especially with no combine, the pro days are going to be big, like yeah. really big. So that's going to be a big part. One other name, Jalen Darden from North Texas.
I've drafted him before.
5'9", 170, explosive. Just, when we hear this term a lot with guys, like the human joystick or just, juke machine, he really is great after the catch, but he's explosive. Especially when you give him a free release, he gets up to top speed really quickly and he sells vertical routes well. He's a guy that you bring in and you can put him on the outside, put him in the slot. Like you said, run that slot fade, those rub routes, different things like that. Get him in space and just let him work.
And the thing is, too, I know a lot of people in Broncos country will say, like, receiver isn't a need at all because, again, like, the Broncos have Tim Patrick, Jerry Jeudy, KJ Hamler. Like, the list goes on. But the thing is, Cortland Sutton is a question mark because of his injury history. Like, he's coming back this year. Tim Patrick is an unrestricted free agent after this year if they tag him. So, like, that's a whole question. And granted, those two are both X receivers. But the thing is, the Broncos have looked and spoken with Rondale Moore already. And so, like, that's kind of a sign that they're open to grabbing another receiver. It's just a matter of where. And without the combine, we're not hearing as much. So I would say, like, I'm really fuzzy on where guys are going to land this year. And I think I think it's kind of all over right now. But that said, I think it is a low-key need that they will try and address because George Payton, when he was with the Vikings, they took a lot of receivers.
Yeah, it's going to be – like I said, this is probably going to be one of the more unpredictable drafts. Like, the most predictable thing in this draft is Trevor Lawrence. Like, that's it. That's pretty much it. When we get to pick two, we still don't know. I'm a believer in Sam Darnold. Like I always talk about on Twitter and even on our podcast, I say it all the time. I believe in, fast food is cool from time to time. For the most part, I'd rather have a home cooked meal. So while that fast food tastes good for the moment, it's not going to last you more than an hour, right? So I like to look at the full context of everything. We live in a fast food society where quarterbacks have to be all pros rookie year. Like, And it's frustrating. I'm like, guys, you got to allow things to manifest first. Tua had some good games this year, but everybody's like, replace Tua with Justin Fields. And I'm just like, that really doesn't make any sense. I was like, that makes any sense at all. When you can instead use that third overall pick, trade back with a QB needy team, gather more picks, and you take Jalen Waddle, and you improve your team even more.
If I was the Dolphins, unless I can get Deshaun Watson, that would be my strategy. I would look to move down, take advantage of somebody else trying to get up to get Fields. And honestly, I actually just did my first full first round mock. This will probably drop a day before that comes out. But one of the things I noticed in that as I was looking at it, Justin Fields should probably be pretty appealing to the Texans. So I think Miami is the most likely situation for Tua, even if they don't meet all the demand or all the demands that Houston has. Because I think right now that's what the Texans are doing is they're trying to leverage what they have. Because the thing is, when Deshaun Watson says there's no way I'm going to play for you anymore, if you're the Miami Dolphins, why would you give six picks up if you know that they have to deal him?
They have to deal him. In that case, you can wait it out and see if you can kind of,
you can play chicken.
Test his poker face and wait to see what happens with him. It's a dangerous game, though. This is kind of NBA territory, which I'm actually thinking about working on an article similar to that, too. I don't want to give too much away, but that's a fun concept that I have rolling around in my mind as well. But unless it's Deshaun Watson, I'm not exactly wasting that third pick on a quarterback. Like, you're bringing, because at the end of the day, like, people really believe that the Dolphins had a great offense. They didn't. Like, understand something. Ryan Fitzpatrick is a gunslinger. There's no throw he didn't think he can make, right? Mind you, there's a lot of throws he shouldn't make. So while it was fun this year and they benched Tua a couple times, because Brian Flores looked at it like, okay, we have a chance to make the playoffs. So if Tua's struggling in his rookie year, mid-season's rookie year, fine, let's go ahead and give Ryan Fitzpatrick the nod. Let's get him back to the team and see if we can make the playoffs. They were a year ahead. Like, I just want people to understand. They were a year ahead.
No, they definitely were. And the other thing is, Tua and Fitzpatrick from the way they approach the game is kind of different. The fact that Fitzpatrick is going to squeeze those balls in, he would fit really nicely on the Broncos offense, which is one reason why I like him, because he is going to give Courtland Sutton or Tim Patrick a chance, even if they don't separate. And both of those guys can win the catch point. Tua, in college, what he liked to do was go to the guys as they're breaking open. Like, Tua would look really great with Jerry Jeudy again, because Jerry Jeudy gets open on a horizontal plane, but he's not necessarily going to win on a vertical plane as often. Like, he's not the guy you want to throw go balls up to and hope that he gets it. He'll come down with some, but that's not how he wins. Like, that's not why you drafted Jerry Jeudy the first. But yeah, so with that said, like, if Miami brings in a guy who can help to kind of add space underneath and then also have Parker, I think Tua will look a lot better as the offensive line develops.
Yeah.
And again, that's all, you know, this is all hypothetical. I do think that it will end up being Deshaun Watson, because I think what's going to end up happening is Houston's going to try and play chicken up until the draft. And then when they realize they get to three, I think Zach Wilson will go number two. And when Justin Fields is their guy that they want and he's there at three, they'll take it because that's the best package they have. That's where I'm at. And maybe I'm wrong, but that's where I'm at right now. With that in mind, with what you just said about patience with the quarterback, though, I got to put you on the spot. What would you do with Drew Lock? Do you think the Broncos are smart to wait it out and give him another chance? Because that's what it looks like it's going to happen.
So what I would do is bring in – if Fitzpatrick is available, I would bring him in because he is an intelligent, you know, teacher, intelligent player, and he could help Drew Lock. I do believe in giving Drew Lock one more year. Reason why I say that is it's a little different to me if Drew Lock was on the Chiefs. If he's on the Chiefs, that's a Super Bowl contending team, a Super Bowl winning team. That roster is ready to go right now. The Broncos to me are still they got some young players. The development still has to take place, right?
They're in the world.
I mean, you know, just like how if anybody listens to any of my stuff, I say I always do a lot of basketball analogies. I think back to the Golden State Warriors before they ever had Kevin Durant, before people really knew who Klay Thompson and Draymond Green was. Everybody knew who Steph Curry was. He dealt with injuries early on, but once he got healthy, he started lighting the league up. Yep. And I'll never forget, it was that playoff run. They went up against the Spurs, and he was literally going nuts, crossing over Tony Parker, making them look silly, hitting fadeaway three-pointers. They lost that series. Then that's what jump-started them into their championship run, their playoff run. They had to learn how to win, learn how to close out games, different things like that. And I feel like that's the same thing in the NFL. When you got young guys, they got to know, okay, hey, it's a four-quarter game, man. Like, I don't care if we're down 21 in the first quarter. We still got three more quarters to go. So let's keep it up. Let's keep our energy at 100%. Let's keep pushing. We need to score. Get a three and out, maybe a turnover, score again, and the game gets back within reach. And I think young players, because you got to think about coming from college, they're so used to being dominant, right? They're used to going up against guys and mossing guys and running by guys and just routing guys left and right, which, you know, Jerry Jeudy's defense, he was still doing that to NFL corners. It didn't really matter to him. He just was struggling with, though, you know, same thing he dealt with in college, those concentration drops and playing with physicality. Well, and to be honest with you, Calvin Ridley had some of the same issues. Calvin Ridley got better with that. And that's why I want Broncos fans to understand Jerry Jeudy isn't a lost cause.
No, heck no.
At all,
I still think Jerry Jeudy is going to end up being probably one of the 10 best receivers in football down the road.
He has everything you need.
And for me, like, I go back and forth on this, and this is like I feel like my Twitter reflects this a lot because I feel like I go up and down a lot on Drew Lock. But my thing is, like, if the Broncos aren't going to get Deshaun Watson, Dak Prescott, like the big time quarterbacks this year, I like the idea of Ryan Fitzpatrick or like real competition from the aspect of Drew Lock is cheap. Like, I don't believe, honestly, I'm going to be honest. I don't believe in Drew Lock. Like, I think at best he's going to be like a 20th best quarterback. I don't think that's the guy. I think he's the guy until you find the guy. But that said, he's cheap enough that if you can't find the guy this offseason, it makes sense to roll back with him. But just be, if he struggles, be ready to pull the hook. But the thing is, they might be a year away regardless. So having Drew Lock and Ryan Fitzpatrick this year and then seeing kind of what happens in the market or in the draft next year, it's not the worst thing. I don't like it just because I do think that this draft class at quarterback is better than next year's. But there's worse things to do. Like the worst, if they traded for Nick Foles and his contract like the Bears did, that would be a lot worse. So,
And when you talk about competition, I mean, you could look, like I said, I would give Drew Lock this year, but I would, like I said, bring in some competition, whether it's Ryan Fitzpatrick. Heck, I would even look at Gardner Minshew.
Gardner Minshew.
To me, Gardner Minshew is Ryan Fitzpatrick light.
Yes. So, he's going to if he doesn't get a starting job.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, neither one of them have the biggest arms, but they don't care. They're gunslingers. They're going to throw it up there, give the receivers a chance. You know what I'm saying? He's not a guy that's going to, you know, take over a franchise, but he can have a 10-year, 12, 13-year career and make a lot of money and be serviceable when you need him to be. Yeah. So I think you bring him in and he can either him or Fitzpatrick can push Drew Lock. I'm telling you, you bring in another young quarterback in there with Drew Lock and say, listen, if he wins in camp, he's taking his job. Like this, there's no doubt about that. You got to go out there and perform.
And see, that's my biggest criticism for, I think, the way many people view Drew Lock already. And this, like, it's all political in Broncos country. It's very political right now, but like, You picked him in the second round, like, and it's a new boss. Like, you don't owe him anything. And I get that that's not like people don't like to hear that. But the thing is, like, you got to think about the team as a whole. And if the quarterback position is the one thing holding back everyone else, like, you need to insure yourself against that. And that's why, I like Ryan Fitzpatrick. If they really believe in Locke, Ryan Fitzpatrick is a good veteran who he can learn from, but also can take over if he needs to. If they're more willing to say whoever wins, wins, I love Gardner Minshew because I think he is right in that range. I think Minshew's ceiling is in that range of like a really, really good QB2 or a passable QB1. And like for what his contract costs and what you could probably get for him like in a trade, I love it.
Yeah, no, definitely. As I said, like, you know, it's just the simple fact, like I said, bringing in some competition and seeing what happens with Drew Lock. And if he rises to the occasion and he's, you know, because one of the main things, like, I'm a Baker Mayfield guy. I told everyone, you know, after year two in 2019, I said, improve, get a better coach, improve the offensive line, and you're going to see a better Baker Mayfield. Yeah. And it took a while because, you know, no real offseason to learn that playbook and learn that scheme. I said, you can't expect a guy on his third offense in in 3 years to just come in and master this offense. I'm like, similar to when Chad Ochocinco left the Bengals and came to New England, he went from a number scheme to a verbiage scheme. And it's different. Now, granted, he was able to pick it up. He just, you know, it wasn't a good fit. But that's the, you know, people think, every fans think that these offenses are similar. Everything's the same.
Everything's mad.
Everything's mad. And it's like, it's not. Like, if a guy comes from a numbers-based offense where they're looking at their wrist and looking at the number play and like, okay, I know what this is, to where you're going into a Tampa Bay huddle and Tom Brady calls three plays in the huddle and it's like, based on what we see from the defense, I'll check, kill, whatever, it's different. And just allow these players to grow a little bit. Drew Lock has the physical tools. It's all about the mental makeup for me. Yeah. You know, what can you mentally and quickly process what's going on, pre-snap and post-snap? Can you pre-snap, see what's happening, put your team and your offense in the right play, and make the right decisions? You know, if you see too high safety and, you know, you give them a little dummy call, kill some things, you know, at the line of scrimmage and try to force them out of their disguise. If they stay too high, run the ball with Melvin, man. Like, run them up the middle and test them out. If they, next play, you see them start kind of toggling and messing around with their safety looks, they come down into a single high, and that strong safety comes into a box as an extra linebacker. Now I'm going to kill this run, and I'm going to go to a passing play and find a mismatch in where it's possibly a cover three zone or cover one or man under one over top. So it's a lot of different things that goes into playing in the NFL and playing quarterback. And that's my biggest thing with people. But definitely, like I said, I think Gardner Minshew is probably the best. Granted, I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick would be great too, but I think Gardner Minshew would be a great option because he's a young guy.
Yep. If it was up to – well, and from a cost perspective, because the thing is, like, the Broncos have a lot of cap room right now, but they don't actually have a lot of cap room because they're almost definitely going to franchise tag Justin Simmons. Yeah. They have to play second-round tenders on Alexander Johnson, Tim Patrick and Philip Lindsay, and that eats up almost $10 million by itself. And so that's essentially, that's like $23 million between Simmons and the three RFAs. Yeah. And so at that point, if they're going to try and chase Shelby Harris, and I think they are, that's almost all their cap space. Yeah. And again, like with the cap might go up, might go down, you know, whatever. But if the cap is set at the 180 that it's projected to be right now, like as we record this, like they're tight against it, just like every other team. And signing a Ryan Fitzpatrick is essentially going to take them out of the cornerback market and free agency. And cornerback, I think you and I can agree, cornerback is the most obvious need on the Broncos right now. They have needs at the nickel. They have need on long-term. They like they have needs all over. Like that, that position room has essentially Bryce Callahan, and you're hoping Esang Bassey and Michael Ojemudia develop. So like they need cap space somehow, or and that's what makes Gardner Minshew more appealing to me, because he's cheap. He's on a rookie deal.
He's on a rookie deal, exactly. And I mean, and you know the Jaguars don't need him because they're bringing in Trevor Lawrence. So you call him up and say, hey, let me get him for $7 million because you don't need this guy. Like you just actually you give them some type of draft capital and move it or move on there.
I'd give them a fourth. I know that like some people will get mad about it, but like I would for the chance to possibly get a serviceable QB2 and maybe a QB1 this year. Yeah. I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah, no, definitely.
He's more likely to give you something if you pick a quarterback in the fourth round. So
exactly. And I mean, like I said, with cornerback, I mean, when we did our the Crocker Report live mock last night, when I had the Broncos pick, and when it came to me being on the clock, and I didn't hesitate. I took Caleb Farley. Like, he, you know, he's the best fit to me. And I mean, we're going to talk about Joe Horn later, but he's the best fit to me for what you guys do. Because he's the more fluid out of the three. He's the most athletic, and he's the better of the three when it comes down to playing zone coverage. Well, so he's able to kind of play multiple coverages.
Well, one thing I really like about him too is in a lot of ways he's kind of like there's two parts to it. Like I feel like in a lot of ways he's scheme transcendent in that like he can play off, he can play up, he's big, mm-hmm. he tackles. And granted, this is the other part of it. He's also probably farther away than the other two because he didn't play this year.
Right.
That said, going to Vic Fangio and Ed Donatell, I would like that a lot, even if they don't survive the year. And like if Vic Fangio and Ed Donatell get fired after the year, having Caleb Farley learn under them for a year, I feel a lot better about him going forward. So like, I'm not afraid of Caleb Farley. And I like that he could essentially play whatever they do down the road if they decide to fire Fangio. Granted, I hope they don't fire Fangio. Like, I'm not saying that.
Yeah,
but he makes sense to me in a lot of ways. He's one of the guys I feel really happy about if they go that route at 9.
And I think that is probably what's going to end up happening.
Same,
you know, like I said, and the thing about what I love about him is because he's a former receiver, his ball skills are great. Like whether it's pass breakups or just catching the football, he's a natural catcher of the football as well. And his timing, anticipation on throws. Like I've seen him mirror receivers and run the route for him because he was a former receiver, you know, and that's kind of I mean that goes back to Richard Sherman when he was at Stanford. He spent like his first year or two, in college as a receiver before flipping to DB, and that allowed him, that helped him in terms of mirroring and matching, playing off coverage, playing zone, reading the quarterback because he knows what the quarterback's looking for in the route and anticipating the route. Especially with the outbreaking route, things like that, where he can make his jump.
Mm-hmm. So since we're talking about Farley, I want to talk about J.C. Horn just because we're on cornerback.
Yeah.
There is a lot of – so I haven't watched a lot of him yet. I've watched two games because I've had trouble getting film of him. But also, like, I've heard a lot of discussion about him in Broncos country, and there seems to be a lot of confusion about him. So I like him. I think I like him more for like a 49er type of scheme, like the Seattle type of defense where he's going to have a chance to really press. He's going to be up on the guy. I don't know if I necessarily like him in off as much. I haven't watched enough to feel comfortable with that, but I feel better about Surtain in off than I do Horn right now.
Yeah.
That said, I'm not saying I hate Horn. I don't necessarily like him in the Fangio defense as much, but what do you see? You've studied him more than me for sure.
Yeah, when I watch him, you know, like you hit the nail on the head. He is a physical, aggressive corner in terms of he would fit in I think it was Vance Joseph's scheme or what they were running a lot of times in Arizona, playing a lot of press man, you know, just getting in the face of the receivers, rerouting guys, throwing off timing. He will fit in New England with Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick loves press coverage. He will fit more so in a scheme like that where he can legitimately get into the chest plate of a receiver and be physical all game long. He's solid to me and off. When it comes down to his, like, the thing I look for is hip fluidity, footwork, quickness in that regard, transitioning. And he can do those things, but I don't think he does them as well coming out of being off coverage. Mm-hmm. I like him being able to transition and turn and run and press rather than, because, I mean, you watch him against Kyle Pitts, how physical he is, and he gave Kyle Pitts a battle. Kyle Pitts worked pretty much everybody in 2020. So, like, he gave Kyle Pitts some trouble being able to get into his face, be physical with him at the press, at the release point, into the stem, and just running the route with him. There's a couple clips of them just, you know, on the boundary. Kyle Pitts tried to speed release outside. He gets aggressive with him, throws him to the boundary, to the sideline, uses it as his friend, as his helpmate, arm bars him, turns and looks for the ball. And like I said, he's better in a legitimately a press man type of defense rather than a mix and match type of coverages where you're going to run some cover two, you're going to run some cover three. Don't get me wrong. His ball skills are great too. He has great. He has really good hands. You watch him against Auburn, against Seth Williams, and he like was in the mind. It's not like he was in the mind of Bo Nix all four quarters. And which Bo Nix is really not a good quarterback, but still, the fact of the matter is he was there in press and in off coverage. But I like him more in a press predominant scheme.
Well, and the thing is, there's kind of a couple parts to it. Fangio's job status does mean that there isn't a chance that George Payton just takes whoever that he thinks is the best because mm-hmm. he's not necessarily worried about it. The one thing that gives me some hope if they do that with both Surtain and Horn is Fangio is pretty flexible with how he's maximized his corners. Like, he saved Prince Amukamara's career by letting him press up more. So, like, that – it could work.
Yeah.
But so one thing you mentioned, though, with Pitts, and then we've talked a little with Trevor Lawrence already, so I got to ask you. I know the other day you were really frustrated with how much people were saying generational. And honestly, the only two prospects in this draft class that I see that could – be generational, and I'm not even saying they are.
Yeah,
is Trevor Lawrence and Pitts. But I agree with you. I think the way it's used in draft Twitter, it waters down the term to the point where it doesn't mean anything. Like, if you hear it all the time, it's one of those. I have this complaint about a lot of scouting reports in general is that if you don't understand the language or you're not consistent with the language you're using, you create more confusion than you really help. So, like, I try to stick to, like, when I'm describing a trait, I try to stay on that with that.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why I don't use a word like generational, because I just think it creates a lot of confusion. Am I crazy?
No, it does create confusion. Because when fans, you know, who don't know the game, is, you know, on the level that we do or other media analysts do, and they see, oh man, you know, Todd McShay said that Trevor Lawrence is generational. And it's like, and then you got, I love Dan Orlovsky, but man, when I saw that tweet, he said Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck and someone else, all wrapped into one is Trevor Lawrence. And I'm just like, I don't see that at all. I'm like, guys, I see Justin Herbert. That's what I see.
This is why I hate comp season. I try to stay away from it unless it feels really natural or unless I can explain what I mean with it. But I hate when someone's just like, oh, yeah, I see blah, blah, blah. It's like, dude, no one has any idea what you mean.
Yeah, and people are going to run in with that and just taking a run with it. And it's just I hate the generational term because to me it's supposed to mean special. You know, Lawrence Taylor, generational. Reggie White, generational. To me, J.J. Watt and Aaron Donald, those are generational guys. Guys that we see, there's clips of Aaron Donald being triple and even quadruple teamed at times, right? That's you're not just a good to great player and get that type of coverage.
Yep.
That's generational. Peyton Manning, generational. Tom Brady, generational. To me personally, Patrick Mahomes already has proven it from a skill set standpoint. He's generational. And there's things, I'm gonna be honest with you. There are plays, there are throws that he makes that I don't believe Trevor Lawrence can make.
I don't think from an arm talent standpoint,
there's no way. Like, no, absolutely not.
People will get mad about this because, like, the whole, like, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, like, both Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson have made throws that Patrick Mahomes has made. So, like, sometimes when people share the throws that Mahomes makes and, like, this whole, like, breathless, like, oh, Mahomes, yeah. it is kind of annoying because some of it's hyperbole. But, like, the Super Bowl throw where he's sideways making a throw into the end zone and he goes 30 yards, like, no one makes that. That's a LeBron play. Like, I see that as somebody who hates Patrick Mahomes because he's the reason my team isn't relevant. But he's so good. You can't deny that he's such a special talent.
He is. And that throw just is a microcosm of just who he is. Yep. He is an elite talent, and he is a generational talent because you're not going to see guys making that throw. They are legitimately horizontal to the ground and make a sidearm throw while going to the ground. And it's a perfect spiral, and it's on the money, but your receiver drops it. You know what I'm saying? Like, that is not normal. And that's what generational is. It's not normal.
Yep.
So, because what you can show me on tape for Trevor Lawrence, I can go back and show you on tape that Justin Herbert did the exact same thing.
Yep.
That arm, that legit arm talent to make those tight, frozen rope type of throws, the mobility and everything. Justin Herbert had all of that as well. He just played in a system that was more horizontal than vertical. So when he came into the league, and he's in your division as well, and he's with the Chargers, and Anthony Lindham said, you know what, push the ball downfield, young fella. And he's like, finally, I get to let my talent show. And he's out here throwing dimes downfield to his talented receiver core. That's what we could see from Trevor Lawrence.
Yep.
So it's like, it's not like I didn't see him before.
And to your point, because I think this is a great point, this isn't to say that Trevor Lawrence isn't special. No. It's just that he's not – I haven't studied him yet because, first of all, I don't think Denver has a chance at him, so I'm trying to prioritize time a little bit. But the thing is, like, when I've watched Trevor Lawrence, I think he's special. Like, if I was the Jacksonville Jaguars, like, there's no doubt I'd take him. But I don't think he's bringing a skill set into the league that we haven't seen before.
No, that's
what's different. And that's why I think the generational term is overused. Because again, like in this class, and again, I haven't studied him either because again, Denver has Noah Fant and they have, you know, all their receivers. But that's why I think Kyle Pitts probably has the best chance.
Yes.
Just because, like, look what he is. Like, he's unguardable.
We haven't seen a tight end like him. Like, I mean, I know, like, my guy Hagler over at Crockford, he's like, he's a receiver. And I'm like, yeah. I mean, to be fair, like, I mean, when you look at his receiving, his actual skill set, you can say it, but he does block. He can block a little bit. You don't want him matched up against these power rushers. No, God, no. That's not his game. We haven't seen a guy, like, do what he's able to do coming out of college.
I think he's a prototype joker is what he is. And again, like, And again, I don't know yet if that's – I haven't studied him, so I can't tell you that's generational. But he's the best possible version I have seen in the games I have watched of what, like, a Noah Fant was. Like, what you can do with, like, an Eric Ebron type. Like, where you can move him around the formation. You can use him as a slot. You can use him out wide. You can use him on the line. A good offensive coordinator is going to make him destroy people if he continues to on the trajectory that we saw last year.
You're gonna have him in a lot of different – they're going to move him everywhere.
If they're smart,
they're going to move him. I mean, and that's what I got to say. That's what frustrates me about NFL coaching. You see a prospect, especially an offensive prospect. And like today, if you check my Twitter, I have Ja'Marr Chase fans just like losing their minds over my, you know, tweet about Devonta Smith. And it is what it is. Like, guys, get over it. But, I look at Kyle Pitts and like you see him just out wide against not even just linebackers, right? Yep. You go back to 2019 against LSU, he played against Byron Stingley. He beat Byron Stingley multiple times. This year against South Carolina, not only did he have success at times against J.C. Horn, he went up against Israel Mukwamu and had success as well.
Yep.
Like, he faces corners, safeties, and linebackers, and he still wins.
Yep.
Nobody's able to truly cover him. And so that's my frustrating thing with the NFL coaches. You see how a guy is using it in college. Use them like that in the NFL. Take your ego out of it and mold your scheme. Like, schemes should be moldable around the talent that you bring in. That's why I get so frustrated with Bill Belichick and that offense and just, you know, Patriots offense. We can't be just a West Coast quick strike type of offense throwing every 3, 4, or 5 yards. Teams are going to press cover you when you don't have guys that can't separate, which we saw this year and the year before.
What's interesting about the Patriots offense being like that too is the fact that their defense is so fluid. Pitts to me is like potentially the one generational guy in this class. I think Trevor Lawrence could be. I just don't necessarily think he's a generational talent. Like, I don't think he's bringing something we haven't seen. But so moving beyond that, because again, thinking about Kyle Pitts and Trevor Lawrence makes me sad because I'm going to probably watch Drew Lock this year. You mentioned Melvin Gordon, and I got to add, like, so the way Melvin Gordon's contract situation is with the DUI, it sounds like from local media, it sounds like the Broncos are going to actually take away his guarantees. They're going to void his guarantees if he ends up facing discipline for the DUI. And granted, the way his trial is set up, it won't happen during free agency, though. So the Broncos aren't going to end up probably cutting him and then chasing a veteran. If they do this, it'll be in the draft. So I've only just begun, but I watched Javonte Williams. I am a big fan of Javonte Williams. Are there other backs who could be like a Melvin Gordon type if the Broncos go that way? Do you see any others?
I'm going to tell you right now. So it's a couple guys. This is a good running back class. I know coming into the draft, and people are not really extremely high on them. They have some players here that can step in and be that bell cow type of back, or at least, you know, that power back, brings that power, that burst. So, you know, Ramondre Stevenson from Oklahoma, 5'11". He played at like 240, I believe, and then he cut weight coming into the Senior Bowl. He dropped from 240 to 227, and he was, you know, he's a battering ram, like physical downhill runner, but he's got quickness to his game as well. That's why I comped him when he's like, especially at the 227, I comped him to a slim Eddie Lacy. Okay. You know, powerful downhill runner, quick feet, can be decisive, and soft hands in the passing game as well, where he can make those plays.
I was just saying, one thing I really like about Riley's offense too is he mixes a lot of different rushing concepts, which is what the Broncos also do with Mike Munchak and Shurmur. So, like, that's one thing I like about Williams. It's like Williams is, you can see him using a lot of the concepts that he would be using in the Broncos offense.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, another running back you could look at as well, going into Ohio State. I Trey Sermon. He was at Oklahoma before he transferred in, and like he started off the season kind of slow, but he hit his stride around Michigan State. They had over 100 yards there. Then you had 300 yards against Northwestern, 100, almost 200, if not 200 yards against Clemson. He destroyed Clemson. Then he got hurt on his first carry against Alabama. I think it was a collarbone or something like that. So. Like, he's another guy. You know, he does well, patient runner, especially when you're in pin and pull, you know, type of plays where you got two linemen pulling. He's patient, following his blocks.
And he's physical.
He's a physical runner as well. You turn on the tape against Clemson, and the way he was finishing runs, it sets a tone for our offense. You know what I mean? And someone for me, like me, I played running back growing up. I studied running back my whole life. That's what you want. You know what I mean? It's cool having a Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara, those specialists, those guys who can do pretty much a lot of different things. But when you want to, especially for you guys in the cold weather, think about December football, right? It's chills. It's nice and cold up there in Mile High. So then in that case, having a downhill runner like that makes it frustrates defenses because it's cool. They're going to hit you hard. First, you know, early on, they're gonna hit you hard first quarter. By halfway through the third quarter, like, man, I'm really tired of this. Like, you know, and it's cold. Everything is amplified from a physicality standpoint in the cold weather. So I think Trey Sermon would be a nice fit if you guys were to lose Melvin. Let's see. And a sleeper guy, late guy, maybe an undrafted guy, Jarrett Doakes from Cincinnati, 6'1", 225. Another physical downhill runner. Guy has some quickness to his game, functional in the passing game. So that's another guy that you can watch for as well.
And then I don't know if you've watched him, but I saw yesterday that they – and again, one back that the Broncos have spoken with is actually Louisville's Javian Hawkins, I think. I mean, I looked at his profile. I haven't watched him yet. But looking at the scouting reports I've seen, He sounds like essentially like a replacement for Philip Lindsay. He's a smaller guy, feedback, can contribute in the passing game.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
What do you think of him? And are there other guys that would make sense if they go that route? Because again, Phil Lindsay's an RFA, and I'm not trying to like tee you up with just names, but
no, you're
way more familiar with this class than me.
I'm gonna tell you when you brought up JVR, I was like, he's basically a replacement for Corey for Phil Lindsay. Like small in stature, but explosive, big playmaking type of runner. He legitimately has vicious cuts. When he's forced to, he cuts back. He has good vision, but he's a home run hitter, similar to how, you know, like I said, with Phil Lindsay. So I think that would be, if you're going to, especially if you're going to lose Phil Lindsay, that could be a guy that you look forward to. And I think he's going to be a late round guy, unless he goes to his pro day and runs 4.2 ish. His frame, I think with his frame, he's still going to be a guy that teams are like, you know what, I don't want to risk too early of a draft capital on him. I can get him fifth or sixth round. That's my ideal spot.
Well, I always think that teams, in a lot of ways, NFL teams try to pick guys so they're defendable. Like if the pick doesn't work out, they can at least rationalize why they did it. I think that's the one thing that might hurt Devonta Smith, is because like he's a small guy. So like if you take him, and he doesn't hit. You're the GM who took a small receiver who doesn't hit. And I think it's a similar thing for a lot of running backs. And I think like offensive linemen, defensive, like I think that's one of the unsung reasons why Aaron Donald fell way back when, is because no one wants to take a sub 300-pound defensive tackle and then be like, oh yeah, it turns out he was small. Granted, they looked because of that, but like
it's crazy. I mean, that's a great point. You know, the pressure of drafting. You know what I mean?
The
main thing. Like, it's just the fact that you got to be, like, and like I said, understand who you're drafting, right? Like, from a schematic standpoint, from a play calling standpoint, know what you're doing. Because for me, when I look at a Jamar Chase, I did a thread on him, I'm watching his tape, and he doesn't win, like, quickly enough on the vertical. So he doesn't play with enough suddenness or quickness or snap off the line. So you see a lot of times, you see DBs, and one thing you don't want DBs doing is two-hand jamming guys. Especially, you know, you get up on Devonta Smith and you try a two-hand jam, he's gonna duck, you know, duck underneath your hands, and he's gonna stack you, and it's gonna be a wrap. That's gonna be a touchdown. Like, you're not gonna recover from that. But with Jamar Chase, a lot of times you see guys go for the two-hand jam and they hit almost every time. You'll see his head snap back because they hit him in the chest high, and he's just trying to, like, I always call it like being a martial artist, like understand how to use your hands. And to me, he invites that I don't know if it's willingly inviting, but he invites physical press coverage, and he doesn't win, like he doesn't beat it easily. Well, so it's like he fights through it.
It kind of reminds me of Cortland Sutton. Cortland Sutton, his rookie year, there was a, like his second game against the Raiders, he just got completely shut down because they just kept getting bodies on him. And it's like once you slow him down at the line, if he can't get above you. He didn't know how to beat it. And that was, I think, the biggest thing he improved at going into his second year is his hand usage at the line to get himself free.
It is so pivotal for a receiver to know how to use his hands. That's what makes, you know, Devonta Smith so good. Like, he's such a pure technician. And you see him, whether it's in the slot, out wide, like against Byron Stingley, it's going to be a top 10 pick next year in the draft. He torched him back-to-back years. Back-to-back years. Over 200 yards. Like, it just... The way he wins is so effortless, so smooth. Like, and don't get me wrong, people are like, okay, well, there's clips floating around Twitter where he's getting pushed out of bounds, right? Well, if you go to 2019, the last time we saw Jamar Chase, put on the tape. He's in the slot halfway through the game against Oregon, and I think it was I can't remember the corner's name that the Miami Dolphins drafted this past draft and with their third first-round pick.
Oh, Igbinoghene?
Yes, Noah. I believe it was Noah in a slot against him. He pretty much shaded him to the outside, gave him an inside release. He legitimately jumped Jamar Chase jammed him at the line and ran with him for about 10 yards going cross field. And Ja'Marr Chase couldn't get free. He got free late. But when you watch Ja'Marr Chase's tape, a lot of stuff that happens because he doesn't win quickly in his stems is on Joe Burrow, because Joe Burrow makes plays happen. He navigates the pocket. He breaks free. He gets out of the pressure, and then he extends the play and puts it on the money. So that's what I look at. I look at Ja'Marr Chase. I'm like, well, if I'm drafting him, I'm using him similar to, because I know a lot of people are like, well, CeeDee Lamb was the wide receiver one, and he proved it. No, he didn't. CeeDee Lamb was going up against third and fourth corners and linebackers in the slot.
That just matters.
That matters, because if you put him outside when they play the Rams and he's facing Jalen Ramsey, that's a no-go for me. They're not throwing that ball to him.
Well, and that's one of those huge differences that, like, and again, like, I'm not trying to make excuses for him, but, like, that's one of those big things that was different for, like, a Jerry Jeudy compared to a CeeDee Lamb this year, is that because Courtland Sutton played all of 31 snaps, Jerry Jeudy was playing against CB2s or CB1s most of the year, and he was facing a lot of brackets. Once people started to realize that he was actually the wide receiver one for the Broncos offense, Tim Patrick was just the one cleaning up on guys. I honestly, this is, I didn't give you kind of like any sort of prep for this, so I apologize. But like, I feel like Chase in a lot of ways is one of those guys that's really benefiting from the opt-out. Whereas some guys are getting punished by it. Like, I feel like Trey Lance, obviously, like, he's gotten, the fact that he only played in one game has hurt him compared to some of the other quarterbacks. Whereas, like, you see Chase, and we remember Chase playing in a historic offense, so we think he's amazing. And I'm not saying he's not, but we're overlooking the warts.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And I've had guys, you know, come at me on Twitter about it, and I said, and they're like, well, Devonta Smith didn't take off until Jalen Waddle got hurt. So, well, if you really be technical, they both are having good seasons, you know, in the first four or five games. I said, the thing about it is, now the difference of, and this is what makes me feel so strongly about Devonta Smith over Ja'Marr Chase, in a way, we saw Ja'Marr Chase do that with Thaddeus Moss and Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Justin Jefferson and Joe Burrow and a great O-line and a great OC. He did all that, and he wasn't getting bracketed, right? We saw once Jalen Waddle went down, John Meachie stepped up and was big time. They started getting the tight ends involved a little bit. We know Najee Harris is a stud, but teams were legitimately bracketing Devonta Smith, and he was cooking the bracket. Like, that translates to the NFL.
And I haven't started – again, I feel like I'm going to tell you this a lot. So, I'm just trying to kind of throw out the disclaimer, because, like, if I change my mind on some of these guys, like, that's why. But, like, Marshall played for LSU last year playing a lot of the similar things that Chase did, my understanding of it. And so, like, if anything, that should be a red flag that Marshall stepped in, was able to produce similar kind of production in part. Doing what Chase was doing. So, like, that should...
Marshall had a great season.
Yes.
Like, before he opted out, and he was playing with multiple quarterbacks.
Yes. And again, I'm not trying to hate on Chase. I'm just saying that these things mean... I look at every draft prospect with an idea of what am I... like, what's appealing, and what are the risks? And the fact that Marshall did that, and the fact that, like, we have a year off when Chase was playing in a historic offense, like... you need to consider that stuff. And I think a lot of evaluators, and especially like media evaluators, I think NFL teams are aware of this stuff. But I think like media evaluators, a lot of them are overlooking these things or not weighing them appropriately. And I think that that's a thing that's leading to a lot of this discussion about them. And again, Chase may very well be the best receiver of this bunch. I'm just saying like the way he wins means that he has to find the right role. Just like every other receiver. He's not a perfect prospect.
No, and there is none, you know? Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, it's all about how you got to know what you're drafting and understand the skill set. You know what I mean? People, remember, 2 years ago, people went nuts on Twitter. DK Metcalf has a terrible three cone. I'm like, you want to know what the three cone really matters, guys? It matters when you're running those choice and option routes.
Yep.
I'm not drafting DK Metcalf to play like Julian Edelman. It doesn't make sense.
Yep.
What I'm drafting DK Metcalf is to do what he did his rookie year and what he even elevated his game to do last year.
Yep.
Legitimately be a dominant number one receiver. Now, granted, I do feel like they need to incorporate more underneath routes or use his vertical prowess to snap off on underneath routes, because the teams are literally playing for him to go deep. And that took away – that hurt him late in the season because they're prepared for it. Yep. So run them on some cross on the deep overs. Run them on some mesh concepts. Get, you know, be simplistic with it in a way, to create more success for him.
If they're going to overplay you deep, you got to be able to punish them short.
Exactly. So it's just, like I said, this draft, man, like, it's so fun, like, studying all these different guys, you know, from receivers to running backs to tight ends. Last year's tight end class was pretty blah for the most part. Yeah, this class is much better, and not just from a top standpoint, but you guys like Tommy Trimble and Yeboah and different guys like that.
Are there any lower, like, again, neither one of us really knows where guys are going to go, and especially like the league sometimes kind of values tight ends differently than a lot of people outside the league, in part because of they value blocking a lot more than I think a lot, not saying you, but like in general. I think draft analysts that are not in the league tend to like look at the receiving first. But the other thing is like the Broncos, because they have Noah Fant, and then they have Albert O, who's probably coming back and is going to end up being the number two. But the thing is, they have Vinette, and Vinette is on a 1-year deal, might get cut because of cap consideration. Like, they could look on day three for another tight end to serve as insurance behind them. Is there anybody that kind of like steps out to you that might be appealing for that reason?
Like maybe, just from a blocking standpoint.
Well, I would say like from like a able to kind of fill in either role if he has to, but not necessarily like a standout either, because Noah Fant ideally is a joker. And I think Albert O, the plan for him is to be the inline guy, tight end two, can be a weapon, but that's what his, I think for the Broncos, that's what he's going to eventually become.
Yeah. Let's see. I got a couple guys. Two guys that come to mind. I think about Nick Eubanks from Michigan.
I love him.
6'5", 256. He's capable of being a solid weapon in the pass game, but he definitely has the physicality power to help you in the run game. And as well as kind of a sleeper guy from TCU, Pro Wells. I think Pro Wells, he'd be more of a move tight end, but I really like his game, especially if you have Albert O. He can come in as your third guy, and while you have Albert O in line, you move Noah Fant everywhere, then you can come out with three tight end sets and kind of do, like, I used to love when we did that in New England. Tom Brady come out, run heavy sets, see the defense, and like, you know what? No, let's spread them out. You got tight ends everywhere, running back in the slot, just create those mismatches.
That was one of my biggest complaints about Shermer last year, is every time he came out in 13 personnel, he would run the ball. And it was like, dude, they expect you to run the ball. That's when he's doing it.
Yeah.
And when you have tight ends like the Broncos had last year, it's like, dude, use them.
Yeah. I mean, they're there for a reason. You know? They're there for a reason. And that's the main thing.
I've heard a lot of hype about this tackle class. What do you think of the tackle class?
I really like this tackle class. Like, I'm not gonna lie to you. It's hard, like, you know, just kind of finding, especially, you know, like looking at this class, there's some really good tackles, man. Like, some really good prospects. And it goes, like, it's kind of a deep group too. I mean, you're looking at late day two, early day three. You think about a guy like Spencer Brown, it's kind of Sebastian Vollmer from when he was in New England at 6'8". 315 pounder. He's a good mover laterally, but he's so good in the run game as well. Like, you know, it's a lot of different guys out there. James Hudson from Cincinnati. It's so many guys that, because I was looking at them, you know, granted, there's one guy, Dan Moore from Texas A&M. I was watching him a couple weeks ago. He's to me, projects more as a guard. I like him more inside potentially than outside, but this is a very deep. Alex Leatherwood, you know, from Alabama. Because he does have that versatility in 2018, he was right guard while they had Jonah Williams at left tackle. And then he took over once Jonah Williams, was drafted by the Bengals in 2019. So, like, he has that scheme versatility, that positional versatility. You can try him out at tackle or guard.
And so I was listening to PFF's podcast, like, they interviewed Joe Thomas, and they were talking about, well, Joe Thomas was talking about how it's better to draft a guy and switch him on side, like switch his side early in his career, because he's still like early in his career in the NFL, like, you're going to be practicing more than you ever have in college anyway. So, like, if a guy shows the ability to learn that, he's likely to be able to kind of iron it out and figure it out early. And one of the things I really like, the Broncos situation this year with tackle is kind of weird, because Juwan James is, like, he's locked into a spot because it costs too much to cut him. But because they gave an extension to Garrett Bowles that really kicks in 2022, unless the cap really jumps, they're going to probably have to make a move on Juwan James in 2022. So the good news with that is they kind of know it, and they have a year to maybe grab a guy that Mike Munchak can coach up in the time between. So that's like where I'm at. And I like Leatherwood a lot. I've liked Leatherwood a while. The one concern I have with Leatherwood is he has had issues with speed, especially from like wide nine. So like, I am kind of concerned with that, but I like the fact that he could possibly be a guard, because again, like, I don't know if Graham Glasgow is a long-term solution, and Natane Mute, as much as I like him, he has a long injury history. So like, it's not a sure thing that he will solve the issue either. So like, I like Leatherwood and the fact that like, you'll be able to find a spot for him somewhere. And I like him on down blocks. So, like, if he plays right tackle, the Broncos with their pin and pull, a lot of times that right tackle looks a lot like a guard anyway.
Correct. And, I mean, and like I said, this is a class where you can draft a tackle. And like, Walker Little, he hasn't played since, I believe, maybe early 2019, late 2020, late 2018.
Because he got hurt.
Oh, yeah, because he got hurt and then he opted out this year and whatnot. So, he's been training like crazy. Getting ready for the draft. I've seen a lot of his videos, him just working, they're working him out, working on his explosiveness and everything like that. He's a guy. You can bring him in, like you said, early on. You can flip him to the right side. Let him sit behind Juwan James for the 2021 season. Allow him to, again, you know, grow even more. He's not small. He's not a small guy, but I think he still has room to fill out his frame in the NFL weight program. So if he adds on another maybe 5 or 7 pounds of muscle, and not lose his quickness or his agility. Now, you know, he sits behind Juwan James, and Mike Munchak has his way with him to develop him mentally and have him watch the game from a bird's eye view. When you do have, if you have to make a move on Juwan James in 2022, you have a guy that can step in.
Walker Little is a weird one for me too, because like, I've seen him considered a first round guy by a couple people, and I've seen him all the way in some mock draft machines. I've seen him all the way down on day three. And he's always a guy, like, if I see him on day three, I take a chance, because it's like, you have Munchak. Like, if I'm the Broncos, I am all for gambling on guys like that, because Munchak is going to get the most out of them.
Exactly. It's really, really important. And that's what I say. I mean, we talked about it earlier, that home-cooked meal. I know for a fact people, media analysts, fans, hated Garrett Bowles for a long time he was struggling. I mean, because he was struggling. Don't get me wrong. But he had everything from a physical standpoint to be an elite left tackle. Up here is where he had to get his game. You know, he had to progress mentally, man. And you saw that.
And that to me is like, if I'm like I think I'm known at this point on Broncos Twitter for being really, really vocal about the fact that the Broncos need to give Fangio a fair shot. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I say that, and like I've stuck to this and I believe this unless he falls apart this year. Cause if Drew Lock is bad, but the rest of the Broncos looks promising, I think they should wait on Fangio. But one of the big reasons for it is his coaching staff is quite good. And like, I'm afraid that if they fire Fangio, Munchak's out the door too. And that's a huge loss. Like, he's one of the best offensive line coaches in football. Like, you hold on to that guy. Because again, it allows you to get the most out of a Garrett Bowles. It allows you to take swings on guys like Natane Mute, knowing you're probably going to get the most out of them. Because the thing is, once these guys hit free agency, like if Garrett Bowles hit free agency and you sign him then, you're paying a premium in hopes that you can recreate the situation that made him look like an all-pro player. Like, exactly. And to your point, like, I don't like fast food meals at offensive line. I don't think it makes sense.
No. I'm just from the aspect of allow guys – to, you know, give them a fair shot. You know what I mean? You see too many times, it's a microwave society. The Eagles, we saw Carson Wentz play great ball, and good to great ball for a couple years. He has a terrible season. The team, in my opinion, was terrible itself in Philly. You know, the front office, terrible. Coaching staff, terrible. It was terrible from top to bottom. But the one guy you blame is Carson Wentz, right? Meanwhile, you got receivers not separating well. You got bad play calling. Offensive line is injured, like, out the wazoo. Like, everybody's hurt on the O-line. Like, at one point, they were down 4 starters. So it's just like, what do you expect the quarterback to do? Not only that, but that front office and head and coaching staff drafted the quarterback in the second round, knowing that they had issues at linebacker, Then they had issues at receiver. They had issues in the secondary, different things like that. Instead of, this is how you ruin a guy's confidence. Hey, I'm drafting your replacement early. Like, that makes, if you want to, I understand, and I've heard Bucky Brooks and different guys, and it makes sense, and I agree with it. Invest in the backup quarterback position, but I look at it from, okay, let me get a Ryan Fitzpatrick or a Gardner Minshew or Brian Hoyer. Let me get somebody that isn't a threat to my star quarterback rather than drafting a guy right after the first round and think it's okay.
Well, and so I disagree with parts of this. And I feel like the strategy to draft Jalen Hurts makes sense only if you have the kind of coaching staff and like infrastructure in place to like manage like the actual chemistry of it all. And like there were reports by the end that like Peterson and Wentz weren't even talking to each other. Like, so like I understand why they hit reboot on it all. I think the Eagles are screwed. Like, I think like their cap situation is a nightmare. Like, they're as bad off as the Saints, except they have less talent on their actual roster. So like they're headed for the dumpster this year. And it's going to be weird to try and evaluate if Jalen Hurts is really the guy, because he's going to have a really bad situation to try and play through. But like, I do agree with your point that like, we're really quick to always blame the quarterback. And again, I know this sounds weird because again, like I'm ready to ship Drew Lock out of town too, but like my rationale for this, like from the Broncos perspective is I'm not ready to ship Drew Lock out of town because of his 2020. I didn't believe in Drew Lock before they drafted him. I thought he was a C tier quarterback. Like, you take a swing second round, it makes sense. But like I feel like we've seen enough to know, like, I don't necessarily think he's ever going to be a top guy. That's like, again, like kind of like a roundabout with that. But I do think your point with Wentz is a good one, because again, like they ate a ton of money to move him. And not only that, they fired Peterson, brought a new guy, and then they shipped Wentz off. So it's like the plan in Philly makes very little sense to me right now. And granted, like they're essentially headed for purgatory for a while anyway, but it just, they basically just, they shot themselves in the foot just to kind of get rid of everybody. Like, again, it's an optics decision. It looks like one.
And the crazy thing is, you ship him out of town and you ship him to a dream scenario for him.
Yeah.
He goes back to a guy that he trusts. That, I mean, and people can say what they want, but remember the reports about how Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy's relationship was. And Aaron Rodgers was changing players at the line of scrimmage from what Mike McCarthy called in. And then he gets Matt LaFleur. And everything's cool, right? Once he buys into the system. Well, Carson Wentz is going to a situation where this is his guy. Frank Reich is his guy. And not only that, they have a great O-line, a great run game, you know, and they got young weapons. I think they need to go out and get Zach Ertz from Philly, and let's go ahead and just make this a pairing to give him his number one guy at the tight end spot, because their tight end spot's a little shaky. But that's the crazy part about it, because I could legitimately see Wentz being in the playoffs, and like you said, the Eagles being at the bottom of the NFC's rankings.
Yep. No, I honestly, like, I get it, because they got a lot of capital from them, and that conditional pick could turn out to be pretty good. But there's a lot of potential for Philly to get a lot of egg on their face for this move.
Yes, it very much so. Because at the end of the day, like I said, I understand the concept of wanting to have a backup, a quality backup quarterback. Second round just wasn't it for me. Especially with the team that the roster that you have, I feel like there's so many other impact players on the board. And I hate that we're in a society now where, you know what? Because I tweeted it out a week or two ago. Look back at the 2011 draft. You got J.J. Watt and other guys falling in the first round just for Jake Locker and Blaine Gabbert and Christian Ponder. And I'm just like, this is what happens when you overvalue the quarterback position.
I kind of feel like someone's going to do that this year with Mac Jones.
Yes.
Hopefully it's not the Broncos. I know the Broncos did take Christian Ponder. Or not the Broncos. The George Payton Vikings took Christian Ponder. So it is a concern of mine. But I hope that that's not what happens.
I like Mac Jones, but just not in the top 15.
I
definitely don't want Mac Jones.
And I do think someone's going to do it.
I think so too.
So let's pivot a little bit to defense, just because it looks like the Broncos are going to work out a deal with Von Miller, or at least that's like what the word is as like we're recording this. But the way Ian Rappaport reported it, it sounded like they were going to turn down his option and then re-sign him. Again, I don't know if that's what's going to happen, and that might just be me misinterpreting it. So, like, I'm not – but, like, Edge is still very much a question whether Von Miller's on the roster or not. It's just a matter of, like, what – how big a need it is. Because, like, obviously, if Von Miller's back for the long term, they still need somebody to replace Jeremiah Tatu, so they're still looking for, like, an Edge 4. Plus, like, Malik Reed is quickly approaching, like, a new contract, and if they keep Von Miller, they're not going to pay Malik Reed and Bradley Chubb. So, like, they'll end up needing an Edge some point. And the George Payton Vikings, like, during, like, the run that George Payton was with the Vikings, they took quite a few Edges in the late, like, the second day to third day.
Mm-hmm.
And, they, like, Danielle Hunter was a second-day guy who was just a really toolsy guy who fell. Are there any kind of, like, guys who stand out to you that might be kind of in that kind of mold?
Oh, yeah, but definitely. I mean, and this is a pretty good Edge group
in terms of depth
and talent. I really like him. One of my favorite guys, and I'm not going to lie to you, I think he would look great in Denver. From Ohio State, Jonathan Cooper, you know, 6'2", 254, 255. You pop on the tape, I think he can get better against the run on the edge, but he can really flat out get after the passer, strong frame, quick first step. He can bull rush. He can rush outside, counter with the inside move. Another guy, I don't know how – his name is starting to pick up a little bit. Ronnie Perkins from Oklahoma. Oh, yeah. I think he could be a day two, day three guy, but I think his name is catching steam right now.
I haven't watched him yet. I'm like working my way to Oklahoma because I want to actually watch Spencer Rattler at one point. Just because again, like But I have seen Perkins considered a first round guy. Daniel Jeremiah has him in the top 50, and then I clicked on Lance Zierlein's scouting report. In Lance Zierlein's scouting report from NFL.com, like he gave him like a third day grade. So like people seem really split on him.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, so again, he's a guy, similar to Cooper. Got to get him, you know, develop as a run defender, setting the edge. But he's so violent and physical, and comes off the ball well against the pass rush. And there's times where he uses a straight arm bull rush and just tosses an old lineman, whether it's a guard or a tackle, just making them lose their footing and gets back there. And he plays especially when he's playing motivated with his hair on fire, he pinning those ears back. He can be a very good rusher, a very quality guy. One guy that really intrigued me just from a measurable standpoint, from UAB, Jordan Smith, 6'6", 255. I think his frame, he's a little slender frame because he's tall and long, linear athlete. But I think, you know, get him into the NFL weight program, I think he can add on maybe 10 pounds or so, go up, jump up to 265. And like he's an intriguing guy as a pass rusher because he's so tall, so long, got long arms when he uses a straight arm. Like you can't – yeah, those physical abilities and measurements, you can't coach. So just watching him develop, I think he could develop into a very good pass rusher. You know, you look at the kind of OC Umanyora, JPP type of guys, those long, quick, kind of violent handed guys who know how to use their length to keep you out of their chest. I think he could be that type of guy.
And one of those things too, and this is one of those things I used to think that I had a type at edge rusher because I always liked really toolsy guys. But the more I've dug into like the analytics behind like successful draft picks and stuff, like edge is like one of those positions where like the tools matter a ton. Like Shaq Barrett stands out as a real outlier because he didn't come out with really, really good physical tools. That's why he went undrafted. And he's like gone on to become really good. But generally, if you look at like the top edge rushers in the NFL, they're all elite athletes.
Yep. Exactly. And I mean, because I'm not sure what you guys are going to do with, of course, we don't know what you guys are going to do with Von Miller. You know, if he does come back, you know, it's great, right? But definitely, I love Bradley Chubb. So bringing in, and I mean, it's crazy because you guys had, did you have Shaq Barrett along with Bradley Chubb and Von Miller?
Yeah, at one point. No, wait. Like so,
did y'all get rid of Shaq Barrett because of Bradley Chubb?
Kind of, yeah. So like the whole timeline of it's really kind of weird. And again, like I don't want to bore you with too much of this, but like it's like the Broncos had DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller, And then they drafted Shane Ray in the first round, and then they brought in Shaq Barrett. So at one point they had all four of those. And then at one point Shane Ray was like looking pretty good. Like he's a little stiff, but like he was a good third edge rusher. And then what ended up happening is like DeMarcus Ware ended up retiring. Shaq Barrett and Shane Ray were supposed to be like the guys taking all the pressure off Vaughn. Well, Shane Ray, like he hurt his wrist and then he just never got back to like what he was. And then Shaq Barrett was kind of going through some injury stuff of his own. Like he got hurt like 2 years. And so Elway, when he had the chance to get Bradley Chubb, because Bradley Chubb slipped by Cleveland because they took a cornerback. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. Who's actually really good. I'm just like, I'm blanking. But because Chubb fell to them, they took him. But then because they took Chubb in the first, they weren't going to keep Shaq Barrett. And Shaq Barrett knew it. Like Shaq Barrett wanted to go and get a chance to be a star edge rusher, to prove himself. So he signed that like short-term contract to prove it deal with Tampa, blew up, and then now he's on the tag. And like he's going to get paid in free agency because of it. So like the Broncos chose Bradley Chubb over Quentin Nelson, and then because of it, they lost Shaq Barrett. And again, like you can argue that was good, bad, otherwise, but like that's actually kind of what happened.
Yeah, I mean, and like you said, I mean, because I love Bradley Chubb, so I'm off. Because what I think about, you know, I'm an offensive guy, but I'm a mismatch type of guy. I'm a matchup type of guy. So I think about the fact of okay, even if you keep Bradley, if you have Bradley Chubb, you keep Von Miller. I think about like I said, looking at those different guys, whether it was a Jordan Smith or Ronnie Perkins, another name, Hamlakar, Rashad.
Oh, Crum, I love Jr. him. I love him.
Explosive first step. So, I mean, you think about it, if you draft him in the mid to late rounds, and then you go into your kind of a NASCAR package, now you kick, I'm good with kicking Bradley Chubb inside head up over the guard and having Hamlakar rush one-on-one with Von Miller on the other side.
And one thing that, because last year, like without Von Miller, Vic Fangio was kind of like, playing around a lot with different pressure packages to try and win, like, and one of the things they did that I really liked, they only did it a little bit, but Bradley Chubb, they essentially played him as an off ball and just lined him up over guards. And if you bring in, like right now, if Von Miller comes back, they have Malik Reed, Von Miller, and they're able to do that. But if they draft a guy and he succeeds, they could have that going forward, even if Malik Reed leaves after his RFA tender for a payday. And I hope he does. Like, again, I like Malik Reed a lot. I just know, like, again, if you extend Von Miller, they pick up Bradley Chubb's fifth-year option. Like, Malik Reed is not going to stay in Denver long-term because he's going to want to probably get paid if he's developing as everybody hopes.
Yeah, exactly.
So it just makes sense. It makes sense to kind of draft ahead knowing that. Speaking of drafting ahead, one position group that I really hope Denver looks at this year is safety. Because this safety, like, free agency looks really loaded at safety, and the draft looks pretty good at safety. And not only that, but if they're looking to draft for the Fangio system, there are a couple of guys who have shown that they're really good in like a split safety role. Yeah. And like that asks something of safety is that I want to kind of go into this a little bit just because like a lot of listeners aren't going to like a lot of listeners won't have known this, I guess. And not to like, but like the Fangio defense, because they play too high, the safety has to be able to run the alley. Fangio will ask them to cover slots. They will cover tight ends. They will cover number three trips. Like if a guy goes on a deep crosser, that a lot of times that's the safety's job. So like a safety in the Fangio system has to be able to play in coverage. He has to be able to cover in man. He has to be able to run the alley. He has to be able to play the run if they spin down. So like you need to be able to do it all to be a safety and be successful in the Fangio defense, which is one reason why I think Will Parks has had trouble in the Fangio defense is because there's just so much. I like Morig. I haven't watched a lot of him yet, but I like Morig out of TCU. Oh, yeah. I have seen him floated as a first-round guy, so I am not confident that the Broncos could get him in the second. I also have seen a little bit of Richie Grant, and I like him. But are there other guys that kind of stand out to you that could be good?
Yes. I have them in my holster, my Rolodex. I just need to put them out on Twitter. A couple clips. Javon Holland. Safety from Oregon. He's a kind of jack of all trades type of guy. He could play too high, like he could play single high as well. But he's so good as a big dime, big nickel defender. He's extremely intelligent. Talked with him, and he was pretty much like him and his partner Verone McKinley were like the QBs of the defense. And you could see when you watch their tape, you could see it. He's a line. He's making sure guys are lined up. He doesn't fall for the eye candy of all the motions and ghosts and jet and all stuff like that. He's so technically sound. He can tackle, and he's great. He plays the ball very well. Also drops into zones. He can play man-to-man coverage. Actually, if you watch the 2019 tape of Oregon versus USC, you will see him manned him a lot of times with Amon-Ra St. Brown. It was such a fun matchup to watch. Those two were going at it. Javon won some reps. Amon-Ra won some reps. It was just a really fun matchup. And to watch him cover receivers, watch him cover tight ends. And I told it to him, I said, going into the league, with your skill set, teams are going to want you to play man-to-man against tight ends. He said, I'm comfortable with that. So he's a guy that you can also grab. If you want, especially when you're looking at too high, I look at a Paris Ford from Pitt, 6 foot. I mean, he's not a big guy, but he's aggressive. He's physical, got speed, can cover ground. But one guy I really, really like in the late rounds too. I actually tweeted out a clip of him blasting Devonta Smith. Tyree Gillespie, 6 foot, 207 from Missouri. Heavy hitter. He's a quick triggered guy coming downhill. He gets from point A to B really well. Fluid as well, dropping off in the coverage. But when I tell you, he will make an impact in the run game if you want to put him in that kind of Cam Chancellor role. Because that's kind of like, I see him as a Cam Chancellor light guy with a little bit more coverage ability, I believe. Coverage potential, rather. You bring him down in the box as that big, that big nickel, big safety in those sets when you're trying to stop the run. And just let him like kind of play around and do what he has to do in dropping off into curler flats or hook zones. He can do that as well. I really like him, and I think someone's going to get a really good player, whether it's a role player or a quality starter for the next 7 to 10 years.
Do you think Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah is a safety or a linebacker?
For me, linebacker. I like him in the 43 as a will. Just that sideline to sideline defender. He can, and don't get me wrong, I think similar to Isaiah Simmons, you could use him also as a safety if you want to. You can drop him off, you can line him up at linebacker and run a typical coverage where he replaces a safety. Safety comes barreling down following the motion, whatever the case may be, and he just replaces him and goes deep because he can do that. He's good in man-to-man coverage as well. There's, you talk pop on tape, you see him against slot receivers. He's a very talented guy. And I don't think he makes it out of the top 25.
Same. My issue with him, and I've said this before, but like one of my big issues with him is just like the valuation of him compared to like how he would fit in the Broncos defense. Because like, I don't think he's an inside linebacker in a 3-4. And while like the Broncos are going to play nickel 60%+ of the time, does it make sense to draft a guy who's probably going to be like, probably like a nickel overhang in like nickel?
Yeah.
And then, like, miscast in the 3-4. Like, it doesn't – if the Broncos were to take him high, to me, that's a sign that they are looking past Fangio. I don't think it's going to happen, but, like, that's – but I'm very curious to see where he lands. I think Isaiah Simmons, like, he just had too much on his plate in a COVID year is what I think happened. I think, like, going forward, he's going to look like we all expected him to down the road because Vance Joseph has shown he knows how to use that guy. He did it in 2018. It's just – I think COVID created an issue for him.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And like I said, I think, going forward, like, they just have to be, like, again, we talked about it earlier, playing to, use these guys similar to their usage in college.
Yep.
Don't pigeonhole Isaiah Simmons just to an inside backer when he's just not, that's not his skill set. He can play inside. He can blitz off the edge. He can play overhang. He can line up in the slot. He can play deep, single high safety. Ask Justin Fields. He picked him off in the semifinals game, last year in 2019.
I love that play. That play was awesome.
He baited him well, and he showed his elite speed to get from that far hash to that solid line, and he made the play.
It was really painful to watch him coming out because it was one of those things, like, I loved him, and it was one of those things that in the defense that I thought could use him, I thought he was one of those guys you'd trade up for. I just knew that it wasn't going to be the Broncos, so it was like, I don't want him to be a Bronco, but I hope he doesn't land in division because I don't want him to punish me for 10 years either. And it's kind of, that's how I feel about Joke too. Like, it's just like, I think he's going to be really good if he goes to the right situation. I just worry that he's going to go to a bad situation. Cause it's, and again, this is true of all prospects, but it's like, if somebody just tries to jam him in the box, I think it's going to be bad.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And like I said, just play to their strength and their skill sets.
Are there other linebackers in this? Like, so I've watched, I feel like I've watched a lot of the top guys. And I need to kind of work my way down, because George Payton, when he was with the Vikings, they took, I think, I want to say it was more linebackers on day three than any other position. I might have that wrong, 'cause I'm not looking at it right now, but like linebackers jumped a ton. Like, they barely took guys on the first 2 days. Like, it was like Eric Kendricks, Anthony Barr. But then, like, you look at day three, and it was like all these picks. Like, they just they swing on linebackers. Are there guys that kind of stand out to you that could be that?
Yeah, so there's a couple guys. This is a good linebacker group too. And when you're looking at day three type of guys, I'm looking at West Virginia linebacker Tony Fields. He's a converted safety, I believe. 6'1", 222. Ohio State linebacker Justin Hilliard. KJ Britt from Auburn. You know, especially from a, you know, look at Tough Borland, and Buddy Johnson is probably one of my favorites, from Texas A&M. He's just such a football, but he's just a football player. And I love what he's able to do, especially inside the box.
How does Buddy look in coverage?
I need to watch more of him. Okay. I didn't see too many reps against coverage, but I need to just watch more of him.
It's another one of those positions that's really weird for the Broncos, because Alexander Johnson's almost definitely back this year. But Alexander Johnson is already really quickly approaching 30, and the Broncos might not want to extend him past this year based on the fact that, like, he's an elite run defender, but I don't know necessarily if he's like a top, like, I don't know if you necessarily win with him in coverage. He played really well in 2019. 2020, I thought he was good, but they could feasibly try and get more range there. And I'm not sure necessarily how George Payton's going to value that. So I'm really curious about this linebacker class as a whole, because last year the Broncos really went out of their way to try and get a coverage guy to pair with Alexander Johnson. But like, because of Alexander Johnson's long-term status, they may very well just try and find linebackers everywhere. So, yeah. Britt out of Auburn's another guy that I've been really curious about, because he's such a violent hitter.
Yes. I really like him. I mean, I saw him at the Senior Bowl. He's not the best athlete, but, you know, like I said, he's a violent in the run game. He's effective. I like what he's able to do. I think he just has to get a little bit better, with his tackling, make sure that he's square up. 'Cause a lot of guys, like, they don't fully break down. They use full 100% technique. They'll try to, you know, throw a shoulder or, you know, whatever the case may be. Just clean that up a little bit. I think he's an interesting prospect. One of my favorite linebackers in this class, honestly, is Baron Browning from Ohio State. I love Baron Browning. Like, I think he's a versatile guy. I could see him playing off-ball linebacker in like a 34 inside, and I could see him playing the 4-3 Will or Sam. I could honestly see him playing a kind of Bradley Chubb type role in a 34.
My thing is this, like, everybody loves Micah Parsons because he's such a good edge rusher. And again, like, I'm not saying he's not. Like, I've watched Micah Parsons. I get it. But the thing is, like, would you rather spend a first round pick on Micah Parsons to do what you could probably grab Baron Browning to do on day two? Like, Baron Browning is like probably right in this, like, he's probably like 85% of like what Micah Parsons is as an edge player. But you're not going to have to spend a first-round pick to get him.
No, he's a legit athlete, too. Like, yeah. Baron Browning is a legit athlete.
We talked a little bit of corner. I like Elijah Molden. I haven't watched a lot of the later-round corners yet. I know that the Broncos just brought in the Northwestern guy. I'm trying to – oh, crap.
Newsom?
Greg Newsom, yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. But and I've seen, like, again, Daniel Jeremiah is floating him as a potential first rounder. So, like, it's one of those things where, like, the valuation of, like, where he is could be way different. Like back, you know, before we all started to get, like, not you, but, like, I started to get really into it, I kept hearing that this cornerback class was crap, like, after the top three. But, like, now all of a sudden, like, I like Molden quite a bit. And, like, Newsom, like, if Newsom's getting first round hype, like, this corner class isn't as bad as, like, people were saying.
It's not. It's really not. They're you'll be able to find different level, different role guys in this class. And guys that right now are legitimately rising. Kelvin Joseph from Kentucky. I haven't watched him yet, but I've seen a lot of his name, you know, floating around. People are really high on them now. Benjamin St. Juiced from Minnesota. Israel Mukwamu. Ambry Thomas from Michigan.
You watched Mukwamu. So tell me more about him, because he's one of those guys, like when I do the mock machines, I read the report and I'm like, hey, I like him a lot. Like, he sounds good. I feel like he's a bigger boundary corner based on like what I've read. And I don't know necessarily how he looks in off, because again, I haven't watched him yet. Like, I watched a little Horn, but I was so focused on Horn, I didn't really watch him.
Yeah. So yeah, to me, he is more of an outside corner. He does have sub package slot appeal. Now there's, if you watch him against Ole Miss, he plays some single high safety as well.
Oh yeah.
He plays some off nickel as well against Elijah Moore, which was a fun battle to watch those two, because it's such a size difference. With Mukwamu being like 6'4", 6'5", and Elijah Moore is like 5'10", 5'11". Their skill sets are so different, but and from an athletic standpoint. But I like Mukwamu, and I think he can be, you know, he's a press corner, but he has some hip fluidity and quickness in his hips and his feet to transition and turn and move that you don't usually see from a guy his size, because he's not just 6'4", 6'5", whatever. He's a big kid. He's a big kid as well. Strapping, good size, good frame to be physical. And he's got great hands, reactionary player as well, good vision. So I think he, to see him playing that D safety, it shocked me, because I was watching the tape. I was like, wait, is that Israel? I was like, at safety? And I was like, oh man. And he did well there.
And again, like, I haven't focused on him enough so I apologize if this is a dumb question. Would it be possible for the Broncos to draft him and eventually have him replace Kareem Jackson? Like, could he become a safety in the league, or is he a corner?
I think he could play safety. I think he could play deep and kind of some strong. Cause I think when I look at, like I said, I'm always a matchup guy. So I think about, remember late in Brandon Brown's career, what Bill Belichick did to him when he came to New England. He played them against predominantly big receivers and tight ends. So, like, I think when you if he transitions later on in his career from corner to safety, that's the mold you kind of run with, where you bring him down in the box and you allow him to face up with the Zach Ertz and Travis Kelce's and Darren Waller's of the world.
But he probably, like, as a corner, he probably makes more sense in, like, the Patriots scheme, like a man scheme.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I like him more, man.
So do you want to do a live mock, or do you not want to do a live mock?
No, probably not tonight.
No, totally cool. So I guess, I can't let you go without, at least, are there any other sleepers that you think that the Broncos should consider? Just like, you're like my guys. If you have any of my guys that you just like,
man.
Like,
because
the whole thing is like, people, and again, I do this too, but like, we overvalue the draft in the fact that it's a lottery. It's a, you know, like, even first round picks have a 50-55% chance of like hitting from like a historical standpoint. So like, for me, like, if I'm going to be wrong, I'd rather be wrong betting on the guys that I like just truly believe in. Yeah. So where are you at? Do you have any guys?
Yeah, I have a couple guys, man. I mean, you know, at the receiver position, I like Dez Fitzpatrick from Louisville, you know, Jonathan Adams from Arkansas State. But one of my favorite receivers in this entire class is Shai Smith from South Carolina. He is a dude, like, route running, crisp cuts, precise movements, very a natural separator as well. Josh Palmer from Tennessee, throw out the stat book, because his quarterback play just was not great. Like, you put Josh Palmer in Oregon, you send him to Alabama, you send him to cut with Kyle Trask in Florida, and he has much better numbers. And that's really what gets draft Twitter and analytics Twitter going, because they don't really watch these. They don't watch the tape. And they, honestly, they don't have the tape of these guys, right? They don't have the all 22. Majority of them don't. So they are really kind of on YouTube watching stuff, and you don't get the full perspective of a prospect watching on YouTube. Trust me, I know. So, like, once you get to all 22, it changes everything. But Josh Palmer, explosive, fast. He shifts gears, and he has insane body control with strong hand-eye coordination. He makes some ridiculous catches, mainly because the ball was usually off target, and he had to make those catches. But he had great reps against J.C. Horn. I've seen him against Israel Mukwamu. He beat and burnt Patrick Surtain in this year as well on the outside, on the fade
and
out.
And no one beat Surtain.
Yeah, no. So, like, for say, Surtain really didn't get beat that often, especially vertically. But he was able to win against him. So, definitely, Josh Palmer is one of my guys. Let's see. I throw out a couple more. I'll go to a different position here. Hold on a second. So, of course, I already talked about Baron Browning. He's one of my guys. I love Baron Browning. I love Asante Samuel Jr. I really like him. And he kind of reminds me of Jason Verrett. I think Verrett is a better athlete coming out, faster. But from a quickness standpoint, how his feet are able to mirror and match and run routes with receivers, that's such a strong component of playing corner, especially in man. Being able to be under control, shoulders over your feet, you know, in a good posture. You're not over there over-leaning or leaning back too far. Your back pedal isn't garbage. He's just technically sound. You can tell his dad played. You could tell that, right? But he has the instinct similar to his father to make plays on the football that I really love a lot. One guy I'm going to throw out, Ifeatu Melifonwu, another guy I really like. I think he could play both corner and safety, 6'2", 212 from Syracuse.
Yep.
I really like him. And he has a partner in Syracuse, Trill Williams, who I'll be watching later on this weekend.
The Broncos just talked to him. So
Trill?
Yeah.
Good. He's versatile, man. He's really versatile. From the little bit I saw from him, I was like, okay, so he can play both safety and corner. So I'm really going to get into his film and see him live this weekend.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. Again, if you don't already follow Damian on Twitter, he is at DP_NFL. You can also find his work at the Crocker Report. He is coming out with a designated deep threat. Go check it out. Because again, the Broncos are going to probably be chasing that guy. So thank you so much for your time.
I also have a mock draft coming out soon too.
Check that out. Cause I love mock draft.
For sure.
Thank you so much.
Anytime, man.